The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Aha! It's a Wednesday, and it's a really, really good day. Let me tell you what happened today. First of all, the House passed the American Rescue Plan Act this morning. Yep, the bill that the Senate amended, and I just gotta ban somebody from my chat room because this person's an idiot. The American Rescue Plan Act, that is the big COVID-19 relief bill, the $1.9 trillion bill that the Senate came in and, you know, they made some changes to it over the weekend, went back to the House this morning where it passed. It passed with not one Republican vote, not one. And yes, there was one Democrat who defected, and it's the same one that I called out yesterday. That would be Jared Golden of Maine. Maine, you know what you need to do. Wow. We're going to go through that in a second, what that entails. Also today, Merrick Garland was confirmed to be the Attorney General. I'm guessing he'll be sworn in tonight or tomorrow, sometime soon. Joe Biden will sign the American Rescue Bill or Rescue Plan Act on Friday. But tomorrow night, before he signs it, he will go to address the nation tomorrow. Tomorrow night, first time, I'm guessing he'll do it from the Oval Office, and he'll attempt to let the country know what is in this bill. Because that's the problem. A lot of us don't know. And the more research that I've done, the more impressed I am with it, frankly. So today on the show, just to let you know, we got a busy, busy show today. A little later on in the hour, at the end of the hour, we're going to be joined by an old friend of the program, Juliana Furlano, who's a very funny woman who was also she hosted the morning show on WBAI in New York for a while. These days, I think she's still with act.tv. And, so that's coming up. We'll just, you know, it's been too long. And then, but in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Mike Lux. Now, Mike Lux is a progressive Democratic strategist. You've heard him on this program before. He has worked on administrations. He's worked in presidential campaigns. But he comes at it from a real progressive standpoint. You know, there are some in the Democratic Party who are not quite so progressive. Thankfully, we have people like Mike Lux who, you know, infiltrate the highest levels of the party. So he has the ears of those who do things. And is who right wing? Juliana Furlano? No. She's one of us. Anyway, I shouldn't look at the chat room right now. So we have Mike Lux coming up in a few minutes and then later on Juliana Furlano. But before we get to Mike, I want to share with you that I've been looking for a good primer of what's in this bill. And you know what? I see Mike Lux is here already. So actually, I'm going to bring him in and maybe we'll go through it together and talk about what's in the bill. But there's other things that I want to ask Mike about as well. So I see he's there. Mike Good. Lux, how great was this bill? How big of a deal is this?
It's the most progressive bill passed in my 40 years in politics. It really is remarkable because it takes $2 trillion. It doesn't worry about paying for it. It doesn't have the deficit hawks won nothing on this. $2 trillion puts it directly into the, into things that help poor people, that help working class people, that helped middle income people. There was very little in the bill for the well off. I'm sure there probably were some programs that maybe directly or indirectly helped, but as far as I can tell, this bill, this is like unemployment benefits, child care tax credits, money to cities and states to pay for human services. This was like, so much that we were asking for and wanted. It's one of the most remarkable things I ever saw. And of course, we didn't get, when I say we, I'm talking about progressives here. Mm-hmm. We didn't get everything we wanted. We didn't get the minimum wage, and we still have to figure out next steps on that. But we got so much of what we asked for, so much of what we wanted out of this bill. So I am just thrilled. I'm pinching myself.
And that's so great to hear, because look, as progressives, we have been kind of like the ugly stepchildren of the Democratic Party. Right. And so we don't always get what we want. And now I'm reading. Paul Waldman writes at the Plumline blog, along with Greg Sargent at the Washington mm-hmm. Post. It's must read, more a morning stop for me every day. And yesterday, Paul Waldman wrote, the headline was, "Hidden provisions in Biden's rescue bill make this a bigger deal than you thought." And he says, if anything, we've underplayed how significant this bill is. So, you know, one thing that I keep hearing, Mike, is that we are going to be really almost wiping out childhood poverty. Now, people don't realize how big a problem that is here, because we are the richest nation on the planet, right? But something like 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 kids goes to sleep hungry every night. Shouldn't be that way. This will help that, because if you have kids, your kids will get money from this program, right?
This dramatically helps that. This is such a big deal for children. And of course, you know, when you're starving a child, it's like, it's so much worse than even a hungry adult, because it affects their development, it affects their brain power, it affects everything in their life going forward, it affects their ability to learn in school. So for us to take care of that issue, to help on that issue, it's such a big deal. I'll give you another example. When I went into the Clinton White House 30 years ago, almost 30 years ago now, one of the areas that I was working on was rural and farm policy.
Okay.
And some of the most screwed people in America are black farmers. And even in the Obama years, they were still screwed. I mean, this is like a constituency that has never had any power. Mm-hmm. And the folks, as you know, the folks without the power in D.C. don't tend to get much. This bill like suddenly puts like all this money into the pockets of black farmers, so they can stay on their land, so they can keep going. This bill puts money into Indian reservations that never had. I mean, this was an amazing thing, and you know, I think, you know, progressives should celebrate.
Yeah.
The stuff we win. I mean, we can never organize people if they think we lose all the time. Like, because what's the point of being involved in politics? What's the point of voting? What's the point of going to meetings? What's the point of doing anything? But on this one, we won some big stuff.
We did. And so tomorrow night, President Biden is going to do his first formal address to the nation and begin what's going to be a tour, basically, where he goes around the country to sell the program, to let people know what's in it, because it is a massive bill, and people don't know what's in it. And again, I have to fault the Democrats for that, because they haven't been instructive enough. They haven't educated us.
Absolutely.
And that's their job. That's what they need to do. So, right. I guess Biden will do it tomorrow, but let's be honest, he's not the great communicator. We need the members and we need everybody to step up.
We need everybody out. And I was actually just talking to Jamie Harrison today about how important it was to sell this. And Jamie was like, yeah, and this wasn't just Biden's accomplishment. This was Democratic members of Congress and Democratic senators. This is the whole party. And we got to get out there and talk about it. And I will tell you, I have an old friend in politics who's sadly passed away, but a mentor of mine who used to say one of his favorite sayings was, you can't take the politics out of politics. And part of our problem last time around was that Barack Obama wanted to take the politics out of politics. He thought all that stuff about selling what you'd done and telling people what you'd done and like bragging about what you'd done. He thought that was all beneath him somehow. But Joe Biden gets it. Joe Biden is I mean, it's like a stereotype, but Joe Biden rode the train every day. Joe Biden,
like a real person.
A real person. He grew up in a working class house. He knows that most people aren't like following politics every minute of every day. That you have to talk to people about what you did, what you accomplished, and so he gets that. And like you say, but we got to get everybody out there talking about it, and we have to have an army. I mean, I've been calling it precinct captains of the 21st century. So some friends of mine used that phrase with me in a meeting today, and I was like, that's such a great phrase. So that's my new mantra.
Cool.
Let's get people online everywhere, in every neighborhood, in every community, in every constituency group. And let's get them talking to their 500 friends on Facebook. Let's get them talking about it on Instagram.
Right.
Let's get them, working with people and telling people the story. I just think that's such an important thing.
Right. And so the one thing, and I see that some people in the chat room also picked up on this, that lifting children out of poverty is huge. And so the provision in this bill, the child tax credit, let me read to you this section. For the next year, the bill increases the child tax credit and makes more of it, quote, refundable. That means that more people with very low incomes will be able to get that credit as a refund, even if they're paying little or nothing in taxes. This is the key part, though. It will also send the child tax credit to the families on a monthly basis, rather than having it as something they might or might not get as a lump sum after filing their taxes or get deducted, which, most people, I'm sorry, if the cash isn't in their hands, they don't see it. This is right. going to put cash in parents' hands for their kids every month, which will make a huge difference.
It'll make a huge difference. The way you structure these bills matters so much. And for 30 years, I've been in Washington for 30 years now, almost 30 years. And the wonks in the party would like, how do the technocrats and the wonks structure things so that it works in a certain kind of way? But then if nobody knew that it was doing anything for them, or no one knew that, after they file their taxes, they might get something later. Like, how does that?
Right. It's like, how does that help me today? How does that help me put food on the table so that my kid doesn't go to sleep hungry?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So now here's another thing that I didn't realize was in here. We know that Joe Biden kind of balked when he did the town hall on CNN a few weeks ago about forgiving student loan debt. Mm-hmm. But there is a provision in here. It says, under current law, if you have outstanding student loan debt that's canceled, the IRS treats your forgiven debt as income, which can result in a huge tax bill.
Right. Huge problem.
Millions of borrowers on repayment plans pay a set portion of their income every month. And after 20 years, the remaining balance is forgiven. This bill would make that kind of loan forgiveness tax free. And it would also apply to future loan forgivenesses that the Biden administration might undertake. And that's going to be a fight that's going to continue because it can't go on the way it is.
Yeah. No, exactly. And that's if it's forgiven by the bank or if it's forgiven by the government, or if it's for, whoever it's forgiven by, then you don't have to pay taxes on it, which is, of course, essential. You can't have a situation where you you forgive people your loan payments, and then all of a sudden they're smacked with a $5,000 bill. I mean, that, how does that help anybody? Right.
Right.
This will allow, for years in the future, if banks forgive a loan, if you work out a deal with your loan provider, whatever happens. But you pointed to precisely the thing. We still have to convince Biden, and by we, I mean the collective we.
Right.
Bernie and Elizabeth and Chuck Schumer's on our side, and like
with this,
all these groups are on our side.
Yep.
We still have to convince Biden to forgive a bigger amount of loans. And I think Biden's reluctance comes from two things. One is that, he's a working class guy who paid off his own student loan, worked hard to do it. And it's like, sort of like, well, shouldn't everybody have to pay out the loans that they take? He's still got that attitude.
Right.
And I don't agree with him on that, but that's kind of still in his head.
And you know what? It's one thing if that's all it was, because frankly, I got to tell you, I was on the wrong side of this. I'm like, we do have personal responsibility.
However, what
I didn't realize, and I've spoken to a number of listeners who have been out of school for decades, and I'm thinking of Robert, who knows who I'm talking about, in New York. He and his wife both say the initial amount of the loan was $50,000. Well,
right.
Now it's 20 years later and they owe $75,000.
Right.
It's just not. That it's wrong. It's just flat out wrong.
The interest, the cumulative, it is wrong, and it's wrong. If a grandparent co-signs a note, the grandparent might be stuck with the bill because their grandchildren may not have ever gotten a decent job.
That's right. Yeah.
There's so many reasons to forgive the loan.
Yes, and on top of it, I'm sorry, you and I are about the same age. When I went to college, I went to the University of South Florida, and I looked up, there's a Florida universities, they have tables online that you can just find, tuition costs from 1978 through, I think it goes through 2018 or something like that.
Yeah.
I paid in 1978, because that's when I was in college, $566
right.
a semester. Well,
right.
It's a different world. I have no student loan debt. Luckily, my dad put me through college, but it didn't cost him that much because I went to an in-state school and it was $566 a semester. That's not a possible now. And for instance, my daughter, who just turned 21, didn't go to college because I didn't want her saddled with debt. I couldn't afford to put her through it. And she hated high school. She's not a good student. She wanted to not go to school. And so why put us in that situation for something she's going to consider, torture? So I guess it worked out for her, kind of. But, she doesn't have a college education. So, and I think a lot of people are now making that choice. And it's not a choice I would have ever made. I mean, I always took it for granted my kid would go to college. And how sad is it that, again, in the wealthiest nation on the planet, some of us are opting not to send our kids to school because of monetary concerns.
Well, absolutely. And your point about tuition is exactly right. The tuitions are radically different. The inflation in college tuition is completely out of control. So it's a different world than when Joe Biden went to college, when you and I went to college. And we have to change policy reflective on that. I think the other issue is this. I think that Joe Biden still, he's what in D.C. we call an institutionalist.
Yes.
He believes that the House and the Senate should work together and come up with solutions, and that the president should sign that. Although he's done, to his credit, he's now done over 50 executive orders,
right.
A lot of progressive things. He's been good on doing executive orders, but I think he's just reluctant to just say the president's going to decide all this on his own. So I think if Congress in the next budget bill, which will come up, later in the year,
right.
Probably late spring, early summer. If in that bill, they don't do anything about student loan debt, I think at that point we might be able to go to him and say, look, you know, Congress just isn't going to get it done.
Right.
Now's the time for you to do it. And so, so I think that's another, that's something that we can look at. We should try to get it through the next budget bill.
Most
but
definitely.
If we can't, then maybe we can get him to do that kind of an executive order.
Let's hope. I mean, there's other stuff. Mike Lux, another thing that I had no idea was in here has to do with health insurance. So no, Medicare for All is not in here. However, you know, I'm one of those people who, although I hate the Affordable Care Act, I love the Affordable Care Act. It saved my life, seriously, yeah. Because I was diagnosed with lung cancer 4.5
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
I was already a cancer survivor, so I wouldn't have been able to get insurance as a self-employed person without the ACA. When it came into being in 2010, I was right there, and I've had my insurance through it every year. The problem with it is, the Affordable Care Act is not so affordable.
Not
it's really
so affordable.
Expensive.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Listen to this. First of all, first thing that happened, and a lot of people don't know because, again, it hasn't been touted enough, is Biden opened a new enrollment period so that if you, you know, lost your job and therefore lost your insurance because of the pandemic, you can now buy into the ACA. The exchanges are open for a few months to allow mm-hmm. people to buy in. That's not in the end of the year, you know, sign up time. But here's the better part. Under the ACA, I'm reading again from Paul Waldman's piece, only those earning up to 400% of the federal poverty level or $106,000 for a family of four are eligible for any subsidies to help afford the insurance they buy on marketplaces. This bill, the ARP, removes that limit, meaning those at higher incomes could get help if their insurance costs more than 8.5% of their income. In yeah. addition to removing this, quote, subsidy cliff, it also enhances the subsidies for those at lower incomes, which will mean significant premium cuts for many people. So my premium might go down.
Yes. Well, exactly. One of the big fights in the ACA passage, which is something that I was deeply involved in.
And I covered it.
Yeah.
On Air America back then.
And we had lots of frustrations. There were lots of things we didn't get, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the interesting battles was over the subsidy issue, because the fiscal hawks, the deficit hawks, insisted that we have this cliff that you're talking about on the subsidies. And progressives were fighting hard against that. And so for Congress and the president to realize what a problem that was, and to fix it, you know, is a great thing. And now, would I rather have Medicare for All just
yes.
get done?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Medicare for All isn't going to get done in this Congress. You know, I mean, trying to get, you know, the most basic stuff done in this Congress is going to be, you know, a never ending challenge with 50 votes in the Senate and a 6-vote margin in the House. But if we can make improvements, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, different versions of healthcare. I mean, sometimes some people think, well, it's either Medicare for All or it's bad.
Right.
No, there is a spectrum. And by the way, some versions of Medicare for All have some pretty bad things in them. I've seen some versions of Medicare for All. If you look at the details, what they cover, all of those kinds of issues, there's big problems.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Whereas there are versions of healthcare that would really make a difference for people that we might be able to get done. And I'm of the view that if we can get stuff done right now that improves people's lives, I'm for it. Maybe it's not the biggest thing. Maybe
right.
it's not perfect. But if we can get some things done that make people's lives better, I'm for doing it.
Absolutely. And that's what this will do. There's another question about Medicaid expansion, because 12 states never signed on to the ACA's right. Medicaid expansion. The way it worked in the first year, it would cover everything, and then it would whittle
right.
down. And
right.
so they bitched about what it was going to be in the future. Well, this bill now boosts the federal contribution to Medicaid. So those holdout states will actually make money by taking the expansion. Right. It gives them no excuse not to. Now, some of them still won't because they have Republican governors who don't care about their people. Yeah. They just want to be obstructionists. But it's there to help people, which is what's so important.
Yeah, exactly. No, there were, as you've said, there's just so many great things in this bill. It was like progressives wrote it.
It's and, amazing, right?
In many of those committees, we did. You know, we got into the details and we worked on it, and we got so many good things done. So I'm really excited. You know, a point that I should make sort of in general about why this bill was so good.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Biden obviously is a centrist, right?
Yes.
I mean, he
mm-hmm.
ran on being a centrist. He's as a senator, he was a centrist, all that. But Joe Biden also, you know, when you look at the people he's appointed, a lot of them are people who actually really care about working class folks and about taking on big business. And, you know, you compare Ron Klain, who Elizabeth and Bernie love,
mm-hmm.
to Rahm Emanuel, who was Obama's first chief of staff. You compare, the top people in the National Economic Council and in the Council on Economic Advisors are almost all solid progressives. I mean, there's a couple who aren't, but mostly they are. And you compare that with people like Larry Summers and,
oh, my God. No question.
Folks like that. Biden just nominated a woman for FTC.
Yes. Their celebration. I can hear the singing and shouts of joy coming through my computer from the progressives in this nation.
Exactly. And I don't know if folks remember, but you know, when Zephyr Teachout ran, mm-hmm. Ran for governor against Cuomo,
yep.
her running mate was just appointed to the National Economic Council to be in charge of technology policy.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, he's appointing some people who are really, really good. And this is one of the reasons we're getting such good policy. And then you look at the House, a lot of those progressives who've been winning primaries.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the key committees that are like, you know, making those. And here's the thing, as someone who's been involved in this stuff for so long, details matter so much. I mean, it's not just, you know, up or down on the highest, the highest image things or the things that everybody talks about. But when you dig into the details,
mm-hmm.
it really matters if you've got progressive minded people working on those details.
Most definitely. And we got to give Bernie Sanders a lot of credit because a lot of people in his position would have just said, you know what? Fuck you all. You know, screw you. After the James Clyburn nonsense on Super Tuesday and all that, a lot of lesser men or women would say, I'm done. Screw you. This is not how you work with people. This was a coup. You know what? Fuck off. I should have won. He should have won.
Yeah.
I was pissed. And I voted for Joe Biden. I did it with my industrial strength nose clip on. I was bracing for the worst. And I got to tell you, I mean, I can still, there are things I can nitpick. I can bitch about a number of things, but I'm not going to because my God, this bill is huge, and he's really trying.
Well, yeah, and by the way, Bernie's the budget committee chair.
Yes, he
in the
is.
Senate.
Yes,
he's the reason we got all that great, one of the, not the only reason, but Bernie was the chair of the committee.
Yep.
You know, Bernie's staff wrote a lot of this bill.
Yep.
I mean, this is why we're seeing what we're seeing.
That's right.
You know, and Bernie's just sort of saying, all right, I lost that election. Wasn't fair, but I lost. I'm gonna go in and be the budget chair in the Senate. You know,
and like, I don't know if you ever heard it. I didn't think to pull it, but somebody took his an interview that he did where he said, "I'm the incoming chair of the Senate Budget Committee, and they turned it into a song. It was awesome. The incoming chair, Senate Budget Committee. It's so good. I'll find it and I'll send it to you.
I did see that. That was a great video. Yeah.
Right. So, and of course, you know, he's taking care of us. And because there is an old friendship there, I think Joe Biden gives him, you know, the respect he deserves in most cases. I still don't get the Neera Tanden thing, but you know what? She's out of the picture now anyway. So, right. Oh, well. So, Mike Lux, I guess moving forward, we keep pushing. Next up is infrastructure. I'm not going to call it infrastructure week, but infrastructure. and this also, but the problem is the Republicans, the fact that none of them voted for this is reprehensible. We're in the midst of this pandemic. Thankfully, it looks like we're maybe going to scratch and claw our way out. Again, thank you, Biden administration, for being organized and knowing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But we need to put people back to work. That's the way to do it. With a Green New Deal would be even better, but and combine it with infrastructure year. But Republicans have to come to the party. I can't imagine with the approval of this bill, which is, depending on the polling you're looking at, anywhere between 66% and 78%. It can't. This is not going to make the Republicans look good, is it?
No, it's not. And I tell you, if they oppose highways and bridges and clinics and new schools back in their home state, I think we can jam them. You know, we can say, oh, okay, so you didn't want economic recovery. You didn't want the COVID vaccine to be distributed, right? You didn't want states and cities to have money for human services. Okay, now you don't want roads, you don't want bridges, you don't want schools, you don't want, you know, I mean, like, we can jam the hell out of them on this, and maybe they will come to the table, right? Maybe.
That remains to be seen. Yeah. So, you've got to be feeling good. Look, I went through 4 years of hell, like most in this country, I think, did. Some of us took it harder than others. I had a 2-year stretch in there where I was not doing well. I really, I've suffered from depression my whole life. This put me over the edge. I really went through the motions. I don't know how I managed to make it through this show each day. I scripted out everything because I couldn't even speak contemporaneously. Yeah. It was that bad. And now I feel like this giant weight has been lifted from my shoulders. So it's a positive outlook. It's something that many of us haven't experienced in a few years. You feeling the same thing?
Well, yeah. And as someone who's like in the trenches fighting every day on this legislation, to be able to work on trying to get stuff done, as challenging as that is, I mean, the margins are narrow and Joe Manchin is always going to be squirrely and but to be working on that, trying to get things done, as opposed to desperately every day trying to stop terrible stuff from happening. I mean, it's like night and day. It's
absolutely
an amazing thing.
It is a good thing. And it's nice to feel good. Hey, Mike Lux, thank you so much for coming on today and commiserating with me. One last thing, though, I got to ask you. So I went on MikeLuxMedia.com, was tooling around the site, and I'm looking at your who works with you. And you have a Joel Silverman there. That kind of freaked me out.
Well, I have to tell you, this is funny. We call him Joel Jr. Because Joel, the Joel Silverman, who is a partner at Mike Lux Media, is actually related, not by family, but Joel, my Joel, the original Joel,
my Joel
that you,
too,
that you
our
know,
Joel,
that you
yes.
know well and love
New
as much
love.
As I do, who passed away, as your audience knows. Joel introduced me to this Joel. And the reason that the two of them knew each other is that they both worked in politics and in the entertainment industry. And so they would constantly, people would be constantly mixing up their emails.
It happened to me. I actually met that Joel Silberman once when I thought I was emailing our Joel, and I got him, and he said, I'm the other Joel Silberman. But I had no idea that he even came on the air with me one day because it was funny. But I didn't know he wound up working with you. That's so cool.
So the two of them became friends because they kept saying, hey, I got your email by mistake. And then Joel Senior introduced me to Joel Junior. Mm-hmm. We became friends. We started working together. And then we formed a partnership because he's doing a lot of great political work in the Hollywood world. So
that's great to hear. Well, please send my regards.
I will.
I think of our Joel often. I miss him dearly.
Me too. I miss him so much. So, anyway,
he'll always be with us. Mike Lux, thank you and congratulations. I know it takes a lot of work. People like you who don't get a lot of recognition because you're working behind the scenes, but you're in the trenches. You are there and you are a force for us progressives. And I can't thank you enough for the work you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Nicole. And I appreciate you having me on.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Great to talk with you about this. All right. You take care. Bye-bye. All right. Mike Lux, everybody. Juliana Furlano is going to join us in a minute. But I'll tell you what. I got to get this picture off the screen. So we'll have a little musical interlude and then back with Juliana Furlano. But this is for those of you who refuse to wear your masks the right way. Listen up. It's Don Karen in the Parody Project.
Pandemic still here in case you might have forgot. When you wear your mask and it's down below your schnozzola, defeats the whole goal.
Mask over the mouth isn't enough.
You say it's too hot, makes it hard to talk. But the top of your mask is not designed to be a loophole. Didn't get the memo. Cover up your schnozzola.
Your mouth is fogging up, difficult to breathe. You won't have that trouble when you end up 6 feet below. No mask for your soul. You have some rights and you're right to have some opinions, but you better sneeze into your own bow and shut off the glow from your schnozzola. If you think your fears have been infringed, it's your excuse to come on in. Defeating a mask just wrecks your style. Your hand is covered by your
actual smile. I love the video.
You might be wearing it underneath your smile. I'm here to tell you that it makes you look like a mola. I sense your schnozzola when you pull it below.
I know it's a challenge to comprehend, but you could accidentally kill a friend. That's the total. When you're free, you're schnozzola.
So put that stretchy band in his place, cover up your mouth, and don't forget about schnozzola. Schnozzola. Maybe you always catch your wind, or maybe it's just a game you play. But this is a matter of life and death, about someone else's right to breath. Issues not about you, there's a larger meaning to what you choose to bestow.
Damn straight.
You and your schnozzola. You and your schnozzola.
It's Don Karen and the Parody Project and your schnozzola. Oh, it's not over yet.
Yeah, come on, Joe.
Woo! Woo!
Live from New York, it's Juliana Furlano, star of Absurdity Today. What's that? Not Absurdity Today?
No.
That is to say, Juliana Furlano of WBAI. No, that one either. Juliana Furlano of, this one says ACT TV.
Yeah.
Let's just say Nicole Sandler brings you Juliana Furlano. Her name hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't. But she's also not live from New York anymore either. You're in Connecticut now, aren't you?
I know. I've moved to the greater New York area. A whole other state.
That works. So Juliana Furlan, God, it's been a long time. That intro was from years ago when you used to come on with me weekly.
It's still true. I did work at WBAI last year and then not anymore. So, you know.
It still works. And you are now with ACT.TV.
I am still with ACT TV, yes.
Right? And doing great work there, but living in your suburbanite now.
I was part of the exodus. I was living in a one bedroom with my husband and my daughter, who is now 5. And it was, you know, we were trapped in our house, basically. And remember, in New York City, it was like the pandemic hit New York first. And we didn't know. It's like, oh, if you touch something, is it going through your skin? You know,
right.
We didn't know anything. So everyone was just locked in their apartments. And that was non-tenable. I mean, truth be told, I wanted to get out sooner. We were looking in New Jersey. So it's a blessing that we couldn't find anything and we made it to Connecticut.
Yeah, Connecticut's better than New Jersey. I mean, Jersey is Bruce country, but yeah, you know, it's Jersey.
I can travel in for one concert.
Yeah, you can. So, and you're still with ACT TV. So now what are you doing for ACT TV?
I'm still with ACT TV. I produce part of their online YouTube content. I do interviews and I do some of my own funny stuff, that kind of thing. Just basically making their YouTube page happy and joyous.
Nice. And I can't, your daughter is 5? No, she was just born yesterday.
I know, she was just wearing her Nicole Sandler
I got her a onesie, which was way too big for her. But
she grew into it and out of it really fast.
I figured she would eventually. Yeah, that's a collector's item.
New York, I don't know if New York is coming back, you know. I am, you know, there's Cuomo. There's a whole thing there.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about Cuomo for a second, because honestly, this is the first time that's been mentioned on this program. Didn't talk about Andrew Cuomo. Didn't talk about Kate and whatever his name is. The kid. Harry.
Andrew also?
Harry.
Oh, Harry. Yeah,
Harry.
I don't call.
Harry. No, I didn't talk about that either. Because, I'm sorry, you know, there are other things to talk about.
There's
now, the Andrew Cuomo thing.
Okay, here's my take on Andrew Cuomo. By the way, I wanted to say your Mike Lux interview was awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm glad we're not talking about the same thing, because I'm like, that's like going on after the closer at the comedy club.
I figured we could lighten things up a bit.
Okay, the Cuomo thing. So I'm Italian, and there's this saying like Cuomo sexual, right? Because it's like not him, but the brother. There's this whole thing going on.
His father. Now, I know I'm old, but I loved Mario Cuomo when I was just a child. Well, I moved to New York right out of college, and I worked at WMCA talk station back in the day when there was no right wing and left wing. It was just a talk station. We had everything on there. Mario Cuomo was governor of New York. He did a monthly statewide call-in show that I produced. So I got to work with Mario Cuomo. Hold on. Here. I've got my little my little portfolio thing here. I have in here, I think, a letter from Mario Cuomo. Here it is. On letterhead from the governor of New York. And it says, State of New York Executive Chamber, to whom it may concern, through my long association with WMCA Radio and Strauss Family, I have come to know Nicole Sandler, who currently produces the monthly WMCA statewide radio call-in show, Ask the Governor. I have found her to be hardworking, bright, congenial, and professional. I am pleased to offer a recommendation on her behalf. Mario Cuomo.
Oh, my God. Put that in the frame behind you.
Oh, believe me.
My understanding of Andrew Cuomo is that he's
not Mario.
Sort of, No, yeah, he's not Mario. Mario was like kind and gentle. And Andrew Cuomo was always kind of the enforcer for that regime. And he didn't lose that personality. He just, that was his role. And he kept it all the way up to the top. But I have a very unpopular opinion that I would like to air here.
Okay, please.
I look forward to having people in the chat yell at me. Okay, remember when House of Cards was on TV?
Yes, but I didn't watch it. But yes, when Kevin Spacey.
So, you know, Kevin Spacey, he was a Democrat and he was vicious and he got shit done.
Yep.
And everyone's like, gee, if we only had that. Well, other than being a Democrat part, we have that. I mean, at least he says he's a Democrat and occasionally he does things like ban fracking, which I support him.
Yeah. You
know, that's good. I mean, there's a lot of terrible things that he's done there in terms of women's reproductive rights, but he really is the Kevin Spacey of the Democratic Party. So if we can pressure him to be progressive,
he's not
capitulating to progressiveness, you know, that would be okay, but I don't know if he's pushable.
And when everyone was like, loving him, and Randy Rainbow did a Cuomo sexual video, I'm just like, I'm puking because, come on, it's Andrew Cuomo. Don't you know?
People don't know anything about his politics. They're just like, he's saving us from COVID.
He killed grandma and he lied about it. The thing about the women coming forward, this is going to be unpopular in this age of Me Too. Did any of them ever say I'm sorry, he kissed her hand. There's nothing wrong with that. And as a woman, you're not some shrinking violet. If what he's doing makes you uncomfortable, say, excuse me, you're making me uncomfortable. This isn't okay. But it sounds like none of them did that.
Yeah. And these offenses that he is being accused of are very.
Touched her face. Touched her back. I'm sorry. It's
uncomfortable, but I.
Right. So then you say, excuse me, sir.
People don't touch your face and back.
No. It's touchy feely. And I hated that he blamed his dad. He's like, that's how my dad did things. Well, that was also 40 years ago. And yes, everybody kissed and hugged. And now times are different. And if he didn't learn that from all the blowback on Joe Biden's touchy feeliness, then he's really tone deaf.
I am the first. Exactly. He's totally tone deaf. Yeah. I mean, I am a first generation Italian American. So when I watch him and Chris on CNN or even watched him doing the things, I was like, oh, my God, I totally get that dynamic.
Right.
The way he sat back. I was like, is he going to unbutton his shirt? And you'll see the white
wife beater t-shirt underneath.
Pasta. You know, there was something very comforting about that. And I know that New York City is filled with Italians and also Jews who are, you know, there's
same
a
thing,
lot of interchange
right?
there.
Same guilt. Yeah.
When I was terrified that my family was going to die of a pandemic, seeing someone I could kind of relate to, even if he has horrible policies, was somewhat comforting. I'm not going to. That's what made me a kind of a Cuomo non-sexual, but feel sexual about your dad.
How does he not know that you don't do that? I guess he's divorced and he's lonely, as he told one of these women. It was up to that woman to say, sir, this is highly inappropriate. Please don't go there. If he persists, then it's a thing. But as far as I can tell, none of these women ever even said anything to him. If you don't tell him, how does he know?
If he didn't know that like half of the country or a lot of women were attracted to him when he was doing this thing and he was still hitting on women in the office.
Right.
You know, just go outside. Have your brother introduce you to some people.
No,
you know,
kidding.
You don't have to hit on people in the office. Everybody knows that.
Right. And you know what the other part is? The whole thing is just so fucked up. After the whole Me Too thing, what we've been through, he should have been overly cautious.
More careful.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm sorry, that just shows he's in La La Land.
Al Franken got tossed out of the Senate for squeezing a hug in somebody.
Al Franken got thrown out of the Senate because he was targeted by a right-wing operative, the girl who he took the picture on a USO tour on a plane, and he wasn't touching her boobs. He put his hands there and made a goofy face because it looked like his hands were over her tits. They weren't. The whole thing, God, pisses me off.
Me too. As a comedian, I have to tell you how annoying it is to have your comedy actually be like picked apart in the office. You can't be a comedian in the office. And I met Al Franken a couple times at Network Station.
Yes,
and he said something like, if you ever, he said to me as I was doing stand up, he said, if you ever run for office, they're going to take everything you say literally.
Yeah.
And that's what they did to him. I mean, this was horrible. Way before this even happened to him. So I think he saw it coming. But
this was a targeted execution. It was. And frankly, it raises concerns for me about, because this is all too convenient. There are no real allegations here. Yeah, he may have been insensitive and boorish and stupid, but he didn't sexually harass anyone.
Yeah, and I think there is a targeted thing against
Cuomo. I think so, too.
Because he is rising in power and popularity.
And not only that, Donald Trump is going to be prosecuted by the New York Attorney General. The Trumpers want the Democratic governor out of office. Mm-hmm. I smell something really fishy here.
I agree. I agree with you 100%. And I'm so glad you're to have the cojones to put that out there.
What else am I going to do? Look, I call it the way I see it. And some people might get mad at me. It's like, oh, but me too. And these women are adults. And if somebody came up to me, look, it happened to me on Facebook. All right. I posted something about guests I have coming up on Friday. And some guy comes in. He's like, "Ooh, you're the woman with the $1 million smile. Your portrait, your picture, your profile picture is so beautiful. Can we be friends?" And I'm like, no. First of all, why?
Because you heard the show. Just listen to the show.
Because you like the way I look. That, believe me, you're in the wrong place. Number one, I'm happily married. Thank you. Number two, the way to engage me in conversation isn't by telling me you like my smile and my eyes and I'm beautiful. It's by saying, wow, something you said really, you know, made me think. Yeah. And I just read him the Riot Act on Facebook. It's like, go away. No, you've got to speak your mind. And the fact that these women won't stand up for themselves is a red flag.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what's going on there, but I really hope the Democratic Party doesn't, you know, pull the ranks of the, just pull the liberal people, the super libs, the social, what they call the social justice warriors out of the woodwork on Twitter and take down, you know, a potential candidate who would be at least a strong arm, the muscle. He's the muscle of the Democratic Party.
Right, right.
You know.
And one more thing while I'm on a roll, Giuliana Forlano.
Hit it.
Donald Trump has rape allegations out there against him. And where's the outrage every fucking day from the corporate media saying, listen to the women. Why is he in office? They just like, oh, well, it's Donald Trump. But Andrew Cuomo touched someone's face and kissed her hand. He's got to resign. Give me a fucking break.
They know how to work us. They know how to work the fact that some liberals have gone out of control. I'm not saying the whole Me Too movement.
Right.
But I'm saying that they're trying to work us into, you know, the same thing that happened to Al Franken. I hope we've learned our lesson.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. Al Franken should be in the Senate. You know, Norm Ornstein was my guest yesterday talking about the filibuster. Oh, my God. What a great interview. Everybody, if you didn't hear it, you need to listen. But, you know, he and Al Franken are old friends. And I even said something about Al Franken. I said, who, by the way, should still be in the Senate. And he's like, oh, yeah. So
I wonder how Al Franken feels about not. I haven't heard him really. I saw him somewhere and I know he has a podcast.
He has a podcast.
I haven't really heard him address.
No, I haven't either. And I haven't listened to his podcast because, to be honest with you, I don't listen to many podcasts.
Best time. You're making your own
content. I'm doing my own thing.
You're making your own thing. You don't really have time to. Yeah.
So, yeah. I guess I was holding that in for a long time. I told you I hadn't spoken about Andrew Cuomo.
I'm so glad I could come here and we could talk about this.
It was cathartic. Yeah. Boy, Giuliana Forlano, you have a way of bringing this stuff
up. I used to be a therapist, so maybe you just felt the vibe.
There you go. And what people don't know is I was on your show one night when you were doing a nightly show, I guess on BAI before you moved to mornings. And I was holding out because I was having like heart palpitations and I thought I was having a heart attack. But I held on to do your show because I committed to doing your show. And it's like, by the way, I think I'm having a heart attack. And so when we're done, I'm going to go to the hospital.
I'm going to go to the ER. I remember that. I remember that. And I was like, she is a professional radio person. She knows.
I hate it when
it fucks you.
Right. It fucks you. you up. If you don't have a guest and someone cancels at the last minute, it really sucks.
And you're like, let's discuss the 75% off sale at the, you know.
So I wouldn't do that to you. It is so good to see you. I miss you.
And I miss you too. Hopefully we can be back together. I'd love to have you come on my program. We could talk about all of these things.
Anytime, and I won't have a heart attack.
Try not to.
Okay.
Yeah, try not.
Juliana Forlano, so great to see you, and thank you for joining us today. We'll have to
do
it again
soon.
Thank
you. It was my pleasure, Nicole. And your show has, as I've said, your What's News and your show has kept me sane during this whole last 5 years. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll see you later.
I'll see you soon.
We'll talk offline. Okay, bye. All right. And with that, we're done for the day. I guess I can leave you with today's edition of the aforementioned What's News. Here we go.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The American Rescue Plan, that's the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package. It's expected to pass the House on Wednesday. Then it goes to President Biden's desk to be signed, ending weeks of bureaucratic back and forth. And then President Biden will embark on a tour and a media blitz to sell Americans on the benefits of the deal. Though progressives are disappointed that it doesn't include the $15 minimum wage, Senator Bernie Sanders said the bill with various provisions for struggling Americans, quote, is the most significant legislation for working people that has been passed in decades. The approval of the American Rescue Plan, which the Senate passed over the weekend, would give an early legislative victory to the president. Democrats have hailed the bill as a historic anti-poverty measure. With the Democrats now in control of the White House and Congress, many people mistakenly believe that the Republicans' power to inflict harm is curtailed. That might be so on the federal level, but they're empowered in the states, where Republicans still control a majority of legislatures. And they're working overtime to make sure they don't lose another election, no matter what it takes. For example, Iowa's Republican Governor Kim Reynolds on Tuesday signed into law what election lawyer Mark Elias called, quote, the first major suppression law since the 2020 elections. Among other things, it shortens the period allotted for early voting and seriously restricts vote by mail. And now the League of United Latin American Citizens of Iowa is suing to keep much of the law from being enforced, the lawsuit calling the new measure, quote, a cynical manipulation of the electoral process. Attorney Elias has been in the courts defending the security of the election since November, pushing back against the lawsuit designed to delegitimize President Biden's win. Now he's turning his efforts to try to stop these voter suppression laws being pushed by Republican legislators all over the country. He attempted to sound a loud enough alarm Tuesday night on the Rachel Maddow Show.
It's just different this time. And this is not to say that there are not other problems in the world. I recognize that there are other stories that have to be covered, but I am begging America and the media to pay attention to this. Right now, we are facing an avalanche of voter suppression that we have not seen before, at least not since Jim Crow, in state after state. It's not just Iowa. It's not just Georgia. It's not just Arizona. It's also Montana. It's also Missouri. It's also Florida. It's also Texas. The list goes on and on. Donald Trump told a big lie that has led to a assault on democracy in the Capitol on January 6th. The assaults we're seeing going on now in state capitals with the legislatures may be less deadly and be less violent, but they are every bit as damaging to our democracy.
Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson on Tuesday signed a law banning nearly all abortions in the state, with exceptions only to save the woman's life. Supporters hope the ban will force the Supreme Court, with a newly strengthened right-wing majority, to reconsider the landmark Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion nationwide. Abortion rights activists plan to challenge the measure in court before it can take effect this summer. Arkansas is one of at least 14 states where lawmakers have proposed abortion bans in recent months. So jury selection started Tuesday in the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. He is the guy who pressed his knee on the neck of George Floyd for nearly 9 minutes, killing George Floyd.
Three jurors were seated on day one. Six were dismissed. All three of the jurors selected on Tuesday said that despite the widespread publicity about the case, they would listen to the evidence with an open mind. Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. Prosecutors have asked to add a third-degree murder charge, but courts are still considering that issue. Jury selection is expected to continue for a few weeks. And here we go again. This weekend, we spring forward. Yep, daylight savings time arrives Sunday morning at 2 a.m. when it magically becomes 3 a.m. But it seems that many in the Senate are as fed up with the constant time changes as I am. A bipartisan group of senators is now proposing we go to daylight savings time year round. We'll see what happens. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.